If you're planning a visit to downtown Roanoke's Taubman Museum, get ready for some deep thinking, an artistic mind trip, if you will. Bill Rutherford's 11 large-scale works interweave narrative, symbol, and form with a collection that takes the viewer on a time-traveling expedition of sorts. Thanks, Bill, for coming in today.
Oh, you're welcome.
Well, I understand a long-remembered character, Br'er Rabbit, mm-hmm. actually leads this investigation into identity and history. And the title, Allegory of No Region, really tells us right off that this work gives us more than a nod to regionalism and what that means, particularly in the art world. I know you were born in New York and you moved around with your family quite a bit, but you've lived in Roanoke for some time in a setting that some might call very Southern. How is this issue of place pondered in your work?
Well, it's important. I did the body of work essentially to find out what I thought about regionalism. You know, basically, regionalism comes in two varieties. There's capital R regionalism, which is that period of the Depression bookended by two world wars. And it's essentially three states and three artists. You've got Thomas Hart Benton in Kansas, or rather Missouri. And then in Kansas, you have John Stuart Curry. And then in Iowa, there's Grant Wood. Everybody knows American Gothic. That's sort of an iconic regionalist piece. Well, Benton was a well-published spokesman for a kind of anti-New York, anti-Paris position. And he came from a long line of politicians, and so his art very naturally was politicized. What he did was reject modernism. And, you know, he had spent plenty of time in New York and in Paris, and in fact considered himself an artistic descendant of Cézanne, who's the great grandfather of modernism. He painted abstractly originally and subsequently destroyed most of that work. A few pieces have survived, and as abstract painting goes, he was pretty bad. But his figurative work is the stuff that you find on murals in, state houses. It's the mythical American narrative. You've got, Huck Finn, Jesse James sticking up a freight car, this sort of thing. Very much what we would call Americana now. Then there's this other variety of regionalism, which I call small R regionalism. And it simply means art that's made in the broader United States and particularly not in significant urban regions, urban places, contexts. And I'll say especially not in New York. So it kind of means all the art that doesn't matter. It's a pejorative. It really is. And the thing that bothers me about it is that the small R regionalism is a word that turns up in museum mission statements and it turns up in art criticism. And no one quite knows what it means. So it's a term that lacks precision. You know, I'd like to see it dispensed with, frankly. I'd rather think in terms of American art rather than specific regions with an idea of inherited culture.
Well, it sounds like essentially then you've rewritten, or should we say repainted, just some of those long-held beliefs about how and where art is made.
Exactly. Right now, it's very difficult to live in New York City, which, after World War II became the center of the art world. But when the Nazis rolled into Paris, the entire European avant-garde decamped and came to New York City, which previously hadn't had very much of an art world. And so modernism, descended on the United States because of the Nazis. Well, now New York is so expensive to live in that basically the new Nazis are landlords and real estate developers, and they're pushing a living, breathing bohemia out to the farthest reaches of the city. They're in Brooklyn now, down a little place called Bushwick. And increasingly, people are even moving up the Hudson, north up the Hudson into the Catskills. These areas are more affordable than the city, but they're still more than I care to pay, and so I stay here in Virginia.
Well, certainly. I know that this exhibit spans, I guess, three centuries. Could you take us through some other of the historical references?
Right. Well, I've used some of my own ancestors as sort of stock characters in this narrative. I have not identified them as mine, but I felt it was legitimate for me to use mine rather than somebody else's ancestors. These are all Virginians. There's a guy who represents the antebellum period. There is a Civil War officer, a Confederate. Then there are people from the Reconstruction era, which was that punitive post-war moment where the South was punished for having rebelled against the Union. So with this idea of the region of the South defined by these three periods, a myth emerges, and this myth is now gone. This version of the South does not exist. We're essentially suburban. And the whole country is essentially suburban. There's no agrarian utopia available, no Jeffersonian model of the way Americans live. You know, suburbs are interchangeable, and so the South is just like the Midwest and just like the East Coast. And so with this kind of generic country in mind, I thought I'd look at it from the perspective of the myth and kind of split the difference and see where I came out.
And the myth, is that how Br'er Rabbit worked his way in?
Precisely. And also he's, you know, very volatile material, as is Huck Finn. You know, these narratives are perceived as profoundly politically incorrect, and wrongly so. You know, anyone who's ever read them knows that, especially in the case of Huck Finn, that this is a scathing indictment of racism and the institution of slavery. And then in the case of Br'er Rabbit, these are actually African folk tales. The consensus is that they originated with the Yoruba people and that they functioned much the way Aesop's fables functioned. They were sort of parables for how to raise your kids and, you know, avoid problems. The infamous Tar Baby narrative, when it made the Middle Passage to the colonial aspect of the country, you know, before we became the United States, but we're simply, you know, little colonies dotted around, this Tar Baby became emblematic of the institution of slavery. And it simply, in the Yoruba tradition, simply meant a trap. So if you take the trap idea and then conflate that with the institution of slavery, then what you have is a very unattractive model of capitalism, which is basically to find a labor force that you can exploit. Ideally, you don't pay it. But today, we're still doing this, only we have sort of wage slaves. This turns up in, you know, with the immigration issue, you know, people working in agriculture in very dangerous conditions with toxins all around them, and they're not paid much, and they don't have any leverage at all because they're not naturalized citizens. So this is, in fact, enslavement. So it's an extreme version of capitalism, but any version of capitalism depends upon finding an exploitable labor force. We have problems with minimum wage issues. This is all of a sort of bad habit, a way that, you know, we've pursued an economic model. And so, you know, really with Tar Baby then, in my particular painting, if you look at the tar drips that are on the road where Tar Baby is positioned by Br'er Fox, the sly fox, you'll notice the initials BP in, which speaks to the BP oil spill in the Gulf.
Another historical reference.
And a trap, fossil fuels, and really the ultimate Tar Baby. If you have seen the pictures of animals covered in this black goo, right, you're looking at Tar Baby for all the world.
We certainly appreciate this primer to the work. Without it, though, there are so many layers to this collection. Are some viewers, do you think, going to maybe only connect with one, walk away with one?
Oh, most likely. I think this body of work is a very slow read. You know, it'll continue yielding up insights, the longer you stay with it, maybe repeated visits will yield greater insight for some people.
That brings up that the new exhibit, Allegory of No Region, opens this Saturday at Roanoke's Taubman Museum, and you've got the entire summer to visit it, maybe several times, and continue that read. It's there through mid-September. Thanks, Bill Rutherford, for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome.